Hello, good evening and welcome in my best David Frost manner. This is the inaugural progcast, if you will, for the brand new magazine Classic Rock Presents Prog, which is on sale as of today from all good news agents. And hopefully something you'd be holding in your hands as you eagerly listen to our words of wisdom. I'm joined in the rather cramped studio by fellow writers on the magazine. I myself am Jerry Ewing, by the way, the editor. I'm joined by our fellow writers on the magazine, Tommy Udo, Nick Shilton and Malcolm Dome. Good evening, gentlemen. Thank you very much for joining
me.
The music that you heard as we sort of entered your oral senses came from the band Panic Room. Very kindly allowed us to use it, and we think it seems to fit our purposes. Panic Room, in fact, it's a track you can hear on the brand the free CD that's given away with the very first issue of the magazine, and there's a live review of Panic Room in there, and I think you can check them out on their website as well, which is www.panicroom.org.uk. I think that covers us on the legal marketing side of things. Nick, you working on the legal side of things probably know a bit more about that than I. Yeah, do you reckon that's
I think the copyright issues are just about covered.
Thank you very much.
Long website address.
But if they're not, I'm no longer a lawyer, and you're going to be sued personally.
Right. Okay. Fine.
Absolutely.
Okay. You can get involved, and we desperately would like you to get involved, and I'm sure, knowing progressive rock fans like I do, you will get involved the minute you've heard what we have to say. You can email us at prog@futurenet.co.uk. The way these progcasts are going to work, you'll get some preamble like you're getting now from us, and then we will sit down and we will discuss various issues relating to the world of progressive music, and we'll take probably three per podcast, chat for about 10 minutes, and hopefully you'll enjoy what we come up with. So really what we'd like from you, the listener and reader, is to email us topics that you would like to hear discussed, and we shall quite happily adapt to maybe even three per progcast. We'll be doing one a month, and you'll find it on the Classic Rock website. You'll be aware of when it's up, because there's all manner of online malarkey that I've discovered since we've set the magazine up that I've had to do. I've much against my better judgment, been forced to Twitter, which I'm not entirely happy about. But
it's not really 140 characters, though, is it?
Then well, it's a Twitter. Let's just say there wasn't very much I could fit in with the 140 characters. But yes, but apparently it's the marketing men tell me that. This is something that benefits both magazine and reader and forges a closer link, and we're happy with that, as does the progcast. It's about getting you, the reader, and the listener involved.
So
please feel free.
Who twitters a twit?
Clearly.
Twitter, you're not.
So yes, you can find us on. I think it's Classic Rock Prog is the name for Twitter. I believe we're out on. I know for a fact that we're up on Facebook and on MySpace as well, because these are things that I tell you. The last time I edited a magazine, you didn't have to do all this sort of stuff. But I thought when I put the magazine to bed, that was it. I was going to have 2 weeks off before we dived headfirst into the next one, and it was like, no, we need you to do now the online editing. And I was like, well, what's all that about? I mean. But anyway, there you go. Anyway, I've probably waffled on a bit too long. You'll know when we're changing topic, because you'll hear that delightful music from Panic Room again, which it's the opening from their track Electricity, to be found, as I said earlier on the free CD given away with the very first edition of Classic Rock Presents Prog. So, gentlemen, I know this is, kind of, we've had to get this progcast up and running sort of sooner rather than later, so it hasn't given you much time. We only actually have, I have one copy of the magazine, which you've just sort of had a quick chance to scan through. I'll just give it back out to Nick and to Tommy to sort of thumb through while we actually just sort of discuss the magazine and really, I suppose, why it's happened. Because I suppose this will lead really what we're going to talk about for the next sort of half hour, 40 minutes. There is obviously a need for a magazine that covers prog rock. Well, is there a need? I mean, we're obviously going to agree because we've written the magazine, but but let's debate that issue. You know, we think there's a market there. Obviously, people who are listening into this will agree. Is there really that market there? It's a finite market, I think.
But, I mean, I think there's a huge market, and I mean, there's such a wide, broad church prog rock today. Yeah. I mean, you've got a whole new generation of bands that maybe 10 years ago wouldn't have you've got a whole generation of bands, new bands, you know, that are taking inspiration from King Crimson, yep, and Rush to an extent, and you've got a massive, massive revival of interest in, you know, prog rock from the late 60s and early 70s, and a real exploration of very, very obscure bands, you know, from around the world, you know, from other countries.
Yep.
A whole, it's almost like a, you know, sort of data mining into the, you know, into the past. You know, bands that probably never released any albums at the time, or very few, are suddenly becoming, you know, sort of very, very hot items and very influential. I mean, I don't think there's been a time when there has been this level of interest in prog, and in many ways shaking off the sort of
the stereotypes that it's had to deal with.
The mainstream has always had of prog for about the past 30 years.
Well, no, I think Tommy's made some very, very good points there. I think the thing that fascinates me the most, and what I've loved about being involved with this project, is that there is so much that you unearth that you just didn't know.
Yeah.
You know, you think, you know, as the editor of the magazine, I think I kind of have a quite a broad understanding of the genre, and I've just delighted in discovering all manner of things that you just sometimes don't have time to listen to. You know, work sort of takes you, I mean, obviously I've worked on Metal Hammer magazine for many years, so kind of like you get them heavy metal overkill, then I'm sort of setting classic rock magazine up, and now sort of 10 years down the line being allowed to present an offshoot, you know, all about the progressive side of the music, and still discovering all sorts of stuff. But it's the new bands coming through, I think, that presents prog. Progressively inclined music is the way I like to sort of term it, because it as you say, such a broad church of musical styles.
It is only a term. I mean, because I think there has never been a time in the past 40 years when there has not been progressive music.
Oh, no, I agree.
And I think even when, you know, the sort of standard narrative seems to run that, well, you know, you had prog rock in the 70s, it all became terribly overblown, then punk swept it all away. Just simply not true.
Absolutely, well, isn't it?
Two writers, Nick being one, and Dom Lawson, who's written the feature about how prog got sexy in the first issue, both make this point. In different ways, but very clearly that, you know, that whole idea that punk killed prog rock was a load of rubbish.
I mean, bands like Public Image and Wire and the Gang of Four were essentially prog bands.
Yep.
You know, they wouldn't have been tagged as such at the time, but, you know, they were progressive rock bands.
Well, Malcolm Dome will know only too well, having spoken to Jean-Jacques Bonnell from The Stranglers, who's in the first issue. Not only does he reveal a passion for Caravan, and specifically in the Land of Grey and Pink, but also starts talking about music that was on the first Stranglers album and then later records as being progressive rock.
Mm. Yeah.
And it's fascinating, because I think, obviously, you know, you'll get your diehard fans who will go, "Pah, the Stranglers," and then if you read what he says, it all makes perfect sense.
But prog's been a remarkably durable genre over the years, and you know, we've got a piece in the magazine about how prog survived the 80s
and 90s.
And essentially, all of these bands While there were, you know, some that went mainstream at the top end of the market and enjoyed continued backing from major labels, there were huge numbers of bands that actually thought, we'll do it our way, we'll be a little cottage industry, we can sustain ourselves, we'll have complete control over our product, we'll own our rights, we'll own our merchandise. And actually, you know, the punk killed prog statement is an absolute myth.
Well, and also, I think it's a very nice touch that actually progressive rock took the idea, the very basic idea for punk rock, adapted it and used it to survive when it was deemed by certain music papers like the NME that that punk killed prog. And in fact, that very DIY ethic that drove punk in the first place was what sustained progressive rock. Through that fallow period that stretched from, like, I suppose, the late 80s into the early 90s. And then the Dream Theaters of this world started to sort of move from the metal side of things and draw that progressive influence in.
But I even think throughout the late 70s and 80s, there were huge bands like Asia, you know, who who were not on independent labels, who were selling, you know,
but
hell of a lot of albums. But, that, you know, one could argue that Genesis and Yes in the 80s had...
They adapted sort of their sound.
...kicked their prog.
They adapted their sound. The times, so, but it still exists.
And, on the one hand, people are very quick to decry what Genesis did throughout the 80s, and... don't worry about that. Mobile phones have a habit of going off in the studio. I've been live on air at Total Rock, which of course is where we're recording these progcasts, and I've forgotten to turn my mobile off.
Prog ringtones only from now. Well, yes.
But the other thing, of course, is that what we're talking about is progressive music. I think people got hung up on prog. Oh, it means huge bands like Genesis, ELP, Dinosaurs. What they forgot was it meant progression. Yeah. And music moving forward, exploring, being adventurous, challenging. And I think now we all realise progressive music doesn't mean a very narrow band, as you said. It's a huge spectrum of sounds and includes bands who might otherwise be thought of as being punk, metal. It doesn't matter anymore. And this is what the magazine does, is draw everything together and say, if you're a Genesis fan or a Jethro Tull fan, what about this new young band? Yeah. And if you're a fan of this new young band, what about checking out Jethro Tull? And that's the beauty of it. You've got the new and the old, not paying homage, but respect to each other.
There's I mean, you know, I know this perhaps now more than I've ever known, having spent the last 2 months sort of really sort of diving headfirst back into the sea of progression, as it were, that there's just a never-ending stream of fans with this kind of influence and who have taken on board, you know. And it could come from Yes, or it could come from Magma, or it could come from Can, or it could come from Pink Floyd, you know, even Marillion. And this is no detriment obviously to Marillion, but just because they're sort of longevity terms a newer band, they influence people now as well. But and it's just so many different wonderful sounds.
But I think the mainstream media have done progressive music a gross disservice for so many years until now with this magazine, where the arbiters of taste on our small island nation decided in the second half of the 70s that punk killed prog was going nowhere, let's kill it off. The reality, in fact, was, as you say, all these bands have continued to exist. They've metamorphosized over a couple of decades. Whole raft of new bands got going with varying degrees of success through the 80s and 90s. But when we had a more limited music media in this country, we had a lot of editors of magazines who decided that prog no longer existed, or to the extent that it did still exist, they'd try and kill it off. And I think the great thing about this magazine is saying, actually, let's present you, the readers, with the reality. There is this ocean of music out there. You've probably only dipped into the surface with the well-known bands. And in fact, you can go back 25, 30 years and find a vast amount of stuff, the existence of which you were completely unaware of.
Well, I think you've summed it up perfectly. And I suppose that's actually seems like quite a good point to bring our opening set of thoughts, as it were, to a close, at which point you'll hear that wonderful Panic Room music again.
Thank you.
let's sort of discuss this. Punk is the word that always seems to crop up with prog rock in terms of, as we've just discussed, in terms of A, it was supposed to kill the music off. B, you know, the idea that I put forward that, in fact, prog bands took the punk ethic.
I don't think that punk was ever about an anti-prog thing.
No.
I mean, when I was a kid, I was into punk. And yeah. Being angry about prog had nothing to do with it. If I was angry at anything, it was
society.
It was Rod Stewart and,
But also angry about the environment that the government had set up for you to live in. That was
In terms of music, I mean, it was this bloated Rolling Stones the terrible, terrible pop that was on the radio in the 70s. I remember going to see Todd Rundgren in 1977, and I didn't really think anything... that I was in the enemy camp or anything like that. In fact, most of my friends who were punks, that is what we'd been into sort of like immediately previous to that. And it wasn't as if there was this kind of anti-prog feeling. I think that came retrospectively. That's the narrative that was imposed upon it.
The most interesting thing is, what is the Bible of the early days of punk? Sniffing Glue.
Yeah.
Look at the first two or three issues. Barclay James Harvest, happily sitting alongside the adverts, Sex Pistols.
And in many ways, Mark Perry, who started the fanzine, his band Alternative TV were one of the first post-punk bands who really made a foray into
big connections with Here and Now.
Absolutely. On the first album, he covers Why Don't You Do Me Right with Frank Zappa. Mm-hmm. You know, they had a song called Alternatives to NATO, which was a long open-ended... You know, it probably wouldn't have fitted well on Tarkus, but it was progressive in its own way, and I think he certainly was a fan of people like Van de Graaff Generator and Magma
John Lydon,
and later had a tie-up with Here and Now, who were a sort of gong-connected...
Yep. Started off as, and still going in various guises. In fact, Matthew Wright, the TV presenter, who's confesses unashamedly his love of progressive rock in the first issue of Classic Rock Presents Prog, massive Here and Now fan, and talked both passionate length about them to me when I went around his flat to interview him for the first issue. Equally interesting in respect of what we're talking about in the first issue, albeit it's only a small piece in the front section of the magazine, is what Jean-Jacques Burnel has to say about the whole thing. One of the points in the piece, because you interviewed him, Malcolm, that really made me smile when I read it, you know, when he referred to the Sex Pistols as a boy band.
Yes.
very dismissive.
They were manufactured. And in a way, every band.
Faust, who actually have a new album out, and I have to say, it's excellent.
Yeah. Which
excellent.
Faust, though?
It's they're a trio now.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, but you're going to find out. You're going to find out, Tommy, because you're reviewing the album for issue two. But
if you look back to that era, the Enemy and Sounds, especially Sounds, are trying to make their name because Melody Maker was preeminent as the media.
Well, magazine. Tommy, you wrote for the Enemy, didn't you?
And Sounds.
Oh, you wrote right. You wrote for both.
But I'm talking about the late '70s.
Okay, so
slightly before your time.
No.
Well, slightly. What was? Yeah. Well, you know firsthand. What was the attitude on those magazines when you worked for them to this sort of music?
I think that when I was at the NME in the mid-90s, I think things were changing.
Right.
I mean, not that Porcupine Tree did get written about, but had someone gone with an idea for a feature on Porcupine Tree, it would probably have run. I think at that time, a lot of younger people had come into the paper,
right,
and the editor at the time made no secret of his love of the Grateful Dead and the Incredible String Band and, you know, Captain Beefheart, and that was in many ways the Trojan horse. Krautrock and Captain Beefheart were the Trojan horse for the progressive rock to make its comeback into that painfully trendy.
This is fascinating to hear because, I mean, Sounds, when I came over here from Australia, Sounds was basically my Bible musically. I mean, and that was what got me started on wanting to do what I did. I used to religiously, I was still at school, I was doing a paper round Wednesday mornings. I get back from the paper round, hop back into bed for that quick half hour before I had to get back up, right, and read Sounds religiously and think, I want to do this, you know. And then, I mean, it was like reading, you know, Jeff Barton, who now writes, you know, for Classic Rock and for Classic Rock Presents Prog. And then when Kerrang came out, reading Malcolm and sort of thinking, well, this is what I want to do. Not getting any guidance from the careers teacher at school, you know, it's like, oh, well, I want to do this. Well, we don't know anything about that. Here's a leaflet on being a doctor or a lawyer. You know? But anyway, it's fascinating to hear this because, I mean, I don't know if it's because I didn't grow up in England that I had a more open view to music, in as much as if I liked the sound of it, I liked it, and I was never swayed by what the fashion dictates that were made in the mainstream media sort of implied you had to like. So, see, I love punk rock, and I love prog rock, and I love heavy metal, and
that was probably more common amongst the kids at the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think there was some kind of hatred of prog.
Yeah.
I think that has been retrospectively imposed upon it by, you know, the media. Mm. I think there were a lot of people that were maybe embarrassed that they had liked Yes or
Well, Rick Wakeman comes out with that lovely anecdote, doesn't he, every time he's... I mean, he was like on the Prog Britannia programme that aired on the BBC at the beginning of this year. Came out with it. I mean, it always makes me laugh. It's like when you know, there was that time when you go into a record shop and you go, oh, can I have the new Jam album, please? And then, have you got anything by The Clash? And, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then it'd be like, you'd just sort of furtively look around and then go, you got any prog rock? And they'd be like, yes, sir, under the counter.
Real brown paper bag.
Yeah.
You know, and I love that. And I suppose that's sort of taking it to an extreme. But everyone seems to agree now that, you know, I mean, and as we point out quite, you know, in different ways and well thought out ways in the first issue of Classic Rock Presents Prog, that, you know, this is actually a fallacy. It didn't happen. I mean, because now, all these years down the line, here we are presenting, you know, a mainstream music title, but devoted to this particular area of music.
The one thing I would say, I think the belief that it happened meant that successive generations of people who read magazines felt that it should be like that.
Yes.
Yeah, the myth has been perpetuated over the last 25, 30 years that punk killed off prog, that the two were mutually exclusive.
Yes, I agree with this very much.
Also that prog collapsed under the weight of its own pretensions or something. Well, you know, Rick Wakeman staged King Arthur on Ice and that was the end. You know, it was glorious. Just too far and, you know.
And Greg Lake needed his Persian carpet
and that's less to do with prog than the excesses of 70s rock.
And I agree with you wholeheartedly, Tommy. And in fact, I think that, and I think you'll find now that a lot of those musicians, and in fact, Carl Palmer, I think, makes the point in the first issue of the magazine, they actually agree that when punk came through, it was a good thing for the music because it really gave them the kick up the arse.
Freshened the whole thing up, but you know, they'd got complacent, they'd done very well, sales had been fantastic, and they suddenly had a lot more competition coming out of a completely different area of the market.
Interesting enough, I think one of the things Sounds did in the late 70s, Dave McCulloch particularly, he was covering what was termed difficult music.
Yeah.
These days, it will be the sort of music that will be in Classic Rock Presents Prog, because it's exactly what it was, a new, slow, progressive music.
Well, I mean, I think the pop group Red Crayola, Peru Boo, definitely were progressive bands.
They were progressive, but the term wasn't used.
No, of course.
Let's call it difficult music.
It's very funny, actually. I was out having a drink last night with someone that used to manage one of the more youthful and still up and coming UK bands who fit into the sort of progressive genre, and we were laughing about it. And he actually said to me, he goes, because I'd shown him a copy of the magazine, and he was like, you know, this is brilliant, he said, but when did this happen? He said, because I remember phoning you up, this is him talking to me, and saying, could you please not use the P word in conjunction with the band when you review them? And I'd be like, well, I will when you tell them not to start, when you tell them to stop sounding like that, kind of thing. You know, and Also, I remember the band Cave-In. Does anyone remember them?
Oh, yeah, you know, yeah,
who were sort of like, they were kind of marketed as a kind of alt rock band, but were just an unashamedly sort of prog rock band at the sort of heavier end of the spectrum. And I remember their PR phoning me up and sort of saying, do you have to use that word when you review them? I know you're a fan and we appreciate the good reviews, but do you?
But look at Porcupine Tree. Stephen Wilson, for a number of years, was keen not to badged with the prog label.
But you know, unashamedly talks, you know, that doesn't even crop up in here. And although I did mention to several writers when, you know, if they were talking to anyone who may air a contentious view of the genre, don't get embroiled in a we're not a prog band argument, because it won't run. We'll cut all that out the feature. We're not interested. All we're here to do, and it's a point I make in the editor's letter, is to appreciate progressively inclined music. Now, whether that's Opeth's melding of death metal and progressive music, whether it's the progressive aspects of Muse or Radiohead, whether it's just reveling in you know, 70s Pink Floyd, that's what we're here to do, is to enjoy and report on this sort of music. We're not here to argue about what is prog rock, but I know it's going to happen, and I'm sure we'll get emails on the back of this progcast about, what are you talking about, M4? That's not prog. And it's like, well, look, you can sit here till cows come home arguing about what is and what isn't prog. Wouldn't it be better just to sit back and enjoy it all?
Well, ideally, we want to acknowledge that progressively inclined, orientated music is a massively broad church. It covers a multitude of sins, to continue the religious theme.
Well,
and, you know, there's the ocean to dive into, explore, because there's so much that you've probably missed in the last 15, 20, 30 years.
Wholeheartedly. And, you know, I mean, it's the way we had to set the magazine up, we had to sort of theme it slightly. And obviously we figured to start, you know, let's look at the sort of the basics of the genre, but do something different. You know, talk to these guys if we can talk to them, take a different angle. We're not here just to tell the story, because everyone's told the story of. You know, you'll find different angles on every reason. There's reasons why everybody's in this specific issue. But we've also, I mean, you know, Tommy's reviewed Stockhausen and Magma in this issue, and yet and Dom Lawson has reviewed Grobschnitt, you know, and I've reviewed Kevin Ayres and you've reviewed Camel, you know, and it's like, and then there's a healthy interest in what's going on with the new bands, as well as, you know, next issue we are looking at the more avant-garde side of things, and where King Crimson and Van de Graaff Generator, who perhaps were two of the most truly progressive acts of that original big bunch, where their influence lay, and it seems, I think, to lay in the areas now covered by the likes of Muse and Radiohead and the Mars Volta.
Yeah, or bands like Parallel or 90 Degrees and The Tangent. You know, there are some, you know, very niche bands that have been relatively underground still over the last few years that have continued the traditions of a band like Van de Graaff Generator.
And I think it's an important point to make, because this magazine exactly addresses it. His problem was, and up until now, prog meant retro, i.e. you're influenced by Genesis and ELP. His thing was, we're progressive moving forward, and it's exactly what this magazine has done. With progressive inclined music, everybody fits in, because everybody's moving forward rather than looking backwards and just rehashing what went before. And that was Stephen Wilson's argument always about prog at that point. Now it means something very different, which is what's reflected in the mag.
Well, if you look at a band like Frost, who are featured in the first issue of the magazine, Jem Godfrey earns his shekels principally from writing for bands like Atomic Kitten.
The juxtaposition is beautiful.
But you look at some of the pop influences in particular on that first Frost album, and you look at some of the completely off-the-wall stuff on the second album, Experiments in Mass Appeal, complete with Ironic Title. That is genuinely progressive music that has moved the boundaries forwards again.
Absolutely.
At which point I think we will interject a bit of Panic Room music and then come out into the last sort of 10, 15 minutes of chat. And then, So I think we move quite nicely from there into our sort of final area of thought, which is we're taking we started Classic Rock Presents Prog sort of giving an overview of where prog came from and what is going on at the moment, but also sort of trying to address the fact that we're almost as broad a church as the music made within it. And in issue two, we're looking at the idea that a lot of the modern music today, whilst, you know, we suspect comes from areas, musical areas made by the bigger bands. Grant Moon makes a very good point in his review of the, or his review of the reissues of the first three Radiohead albums, is that maybe Radiohead have never heard The Dark Side of the Moon, but there is no doubting, you look at the way they musically have progressed over the first three albums, from sort of indie miserabilists to this sort of, to basically a prog rock band by any other name. Where did they get that inspiration from? They must have been listening to some of the more avant-garde sounds, which I in the area I know that appeals very much to sort of Tommy's ears and to Malcolm's ears, the Van de Graaff generators, yeah, the King Crimson, but also to the areas that lie perhaps beyond that. Krautrock.
I think definitely Krautrock, but also I think a lot of the people that inspired Krautrock, to which Stockhausen, mm-hmm, Messiaen, yeah, you know, sort of left field 20th century composers, yeah, mainstream, yeah, you know, academic composers, Stravinsky particularly, also to jazz, you know, to,
well,
Eric
the fusion
Dalty
aspect
and
as
Miles
well,
Davis, and to, you know, unusual world music, gamelan music, and you know,
you only have to. I mean, I think the figureheads of the modern approach are Radiohead, the Mars Volta, Muse.
Mastodon, perhaps?
Mastodon. Well, you see, this is an interesting, yeah, one. We've decided we will feature, we've reviewed the new Mastodon album in the new issue, because I listened to it, and to me, that's a prog rock album.
Yeah.
Without swathes of keyboards, basically. And you know, if they would be proud to have donned a cape had one been around, I think. It's, the influence of King Crimson is writ large, yeah, across that
It
record.
Would have been a bloody heavy cape, though.
It would have been. But, you know, And what I find so appealing and fascinating about these bands is that they, you know, I love that 80s revival. And although I'm sure if any of the members of the bands that spearheaded that were here, they would argue that their inspirations came from sort of a bit further beyond. But we can see that there was, you know, they furrowed the middle ground,
yeah,
for you know, where they, which of course at the time was unique because no one else had done that.
Yeah.
But today's younger bands, they look so much further afield.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Rush and Queen, who would have ever thought pitching those two together and still coming out with something as angular and yet melodic as Muse do?
Yeah. Yep.
You know, and the Mars Volta, sort of, that's where you hear that kind of more sort of like odd world music meeting fusion.
Yeah.
Well, and then
I mean,
radio.
I think the internet has got a lot to do with this. I mean, the fact that there is just now so much music,
yeah,
available, music from the past 100 years,
yeah,
that is out there and available for, inverted commas, free.
Well, you're right. And let us not forget, as well as sort of Nick points out in his sort of the feature in the issue of where prog sort of kept itself going, the internet also basically, if that kept prog alive, yeah, when it was going through perhaps its lowest period since Emerson, Lake and Palmer released Love Beach.
Yeah, that was a low point. That's true. I think it's that whole underground feel.
It's the whole underground feel, but it's the back to the DIY punk, yeah, ethos of all these bands that thought, well, if we can't get mainstream backing from a big label, sod it, we'll do it ourselves.
But you speak to any of those bands from the 80s who got major label deals, they'll all tell you now, possibly the worst thing we ever did, because the labels just didn't have a clue how, yeah, to work us, and we all ended up doing our own thing anyway.
Absolutely. There are some that have evolved. You know, you look at what happened with Dream Theater, who have gone from, you know, they've moved around a bit from one label to another.
Indeed.
But they're now filling Wembley Arena. Yep. And that was inconceivable when they originally started out as Majesty in the States and then reinvented themselves for their second album with James LaBrie and have gone from strength to strength really ever since.
I mean, you know, Coheed and Cambria, several nights at the Astoria playing each album, or, you know, at, yeah, Brixton Academy, Mars Volta. you know, a pretty big little Muse sell out Wembley Stadium.
Yeah,
you know, Muse are up there with Genesis, Tool.
You know, I mean, they do incredibly well. Yeah.
And I think they've got an album coming out this year as well. It's something to. Something for me, more work for me to.
there again.
So, it's great because already, and I think this is a very healthy thing for the magazine. Already, that one was the first one was always kind of pre-planned in a way, and I mean we know where we're going over the next three issues that will appear this year. There is talk to increase the frequency. Next year we'll see what happens, obviously, it's a welcome boost for the genre, I think. Yeah. That because although it's a mainstream magazine that sells in mainstream shops, I don't think it's still not commercializing the genre, and there are always going to be purists.
Yeah, well, but I mean, I think for every band that you cover in the magazine, there's going to be 10 that you don't and 100 that you're never even going to hear of.
And you're right, and it's a pity that we can't hear them all, actually, because such is the quality of music that I'm actually hearing at the moment. Be it, you know, a rejuvenated IQ putting out a new album, which, I mean, I listened to and was genuinely sort of like, wow. You know, it's and then this new stuff that I'm getting in the office that I'm listening to is still making me go, wow. And it's all different. Mm. I mean, because that was always the great thing I loved about prog. It was all lumped in. But Genesis never sounded like Yes. Yeah. And Yes never sounded like Pink Floyd. And Pink Floyd never sounded like Genesis. And they never sounded like King Crimson. And they didn't sound like Van de Graaff Generator. And they didn't sound like Camel. And they didn't even sound like Caravan. And they certainly didn't sound like Jethro Tull. I mean, it was just...
I mean, it certainly wasn't a prog sound.
No.
No, there wasn't.
There were instruments, I think, that were, for want of a better word, instrumental in creating sounds.
The Morgue and the VC... Definitely. But there was... You're right. I mean, there was no unified prog sound.
And also, there wasn't a unified sound with certain bands from one album to another. Look at Jethro Tull with their revolving doors and Ian Anderson's quest to update and change the sound on every album. You know, compare Heavy Horses with Crest of a Nave.
Yeah.
Could be two different bands almost.
Or Thick as a Brick.
Or Thick as a Brick
to Under Wraps.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Although I don't think many people listen to Under Wraps these days.
No, probably not. They have an issue.
But
I think we're also living in an era for the first time in certainly more than 30 years where the barriers have come down, where people don't want to just be punk or prog or metal.
Yeah.
They're happy to actually try different things.
Exactly. I think that's the crux of it is that, you know, the barriers are definitely down. There are a lot of people that are content to rest within a genre and within the you know, there are a lot of mediocrities, there always will be, but there just seem to me to be more bands that are genuinely challenging. You know, bands like, on one hand, the Dillinger Escape Plan, that write music that they can't actually play yet. They have to aspire to get that good to be able to perform.
Actually, an interesting point you made in the overview of the Talk Talk album, Spirit of Eden. Which is for anybody who's listening that actually hasn't seen that segment of Mag. We have a piece in the front section called It's Prog Jim, But Not As We Know It, where we look at basically what are great prog albums, but not from prog rock bands. And Tommy's written a wonderful piece about Talk Talk's 1988 album, was it Spirit of Eden? Which confounded almost everybody, but is a wonderfully progressive record. That didn't they admit that they couldn't actually perform it live at the time?
But it's like the Beatles. I mean, you know, the Beatles were essentially the first prog band. After they'd done Sgt. Pepper, they could not perform that music live.
No, of course not. Then the studio and live were two very different mediums. Yeah. They don't have to be linked.
And that's another great thing about technology today. I mean, whereas bands like Emerson, Lake and Palmer and Yes, you know, were pioneering 16-track and 24-track recording, which was very, very difficult to do in the early 70s. I mean, now you can buy a package that you can essentially do in your bedroom, you know. So
are we going to see the advent of a software package of like create your own prog rock sound kind of?
Well, I think the next challenge is to create your own On Ice Spectacular.
Or prog band the game.
I wouldn't mind betting, because the Beatles rock band is coming. I read in the paper that Danny Harrison has, George Harrison's son, has managed to get the two surviving into the idea, and he's working on it with George Martin's son. It's surely in a year that has seen us start the year with Prog Britannia, which was easy to criticise, but still was acknowledgement from something as mainstream as the BBC that this not only existed, but didn't actually just want to laugh at the genre, to the launch of the, you know, the first sort of mainstream music title devoted to progressively inclined music, to even Richard and Judy having Rick Wakeman and by proxy myself on recently to discuss what progressive music is. And then we have albums coming up this year from Dream Theater, from the Mars Volta, you know, Dream Theater headlining at Wembley Arena, Porcupine Tree playing Brixton Academy, you know, getting bigger and bigger. Surely the genre must be in its healthiest state for years. The quality of new music being made, not by just by brand new bands, but perhaps some of the more established acts seeming to raise their game as well. Yeah. Would you agree that prog is in a pretty healthy state at the moment?
I think prog's in a fantastically healthy state, the best shape it's been in, you know, certainly since I've been listening to prog and not being quite as aged as the other people I'm sharing this luxurious studio
Thank you,
with.
Nick. I can You're fired.
Marvellous. Issue one and out. I can present the perspective of the younger generation, but I think over and above the pure quality of the stuff that's coming out, I think within the prog world, you've got some really innovative minds who, aside from the quality of the music they're producing, they're also thinking about how to do things differently, how to present themselves, market themselves as bands differently. You know, if you go back, Marillion are one of the bands that have really pioneered the
Pendragon IQ were very, very much, yeah, and Galahad.
Absolutely.
These are bands who sort of like said, sod it, we're not going anywhere, we will keep on doing this, but we're going to have to do it our way, so we will. Yeah.
Absolutely, and if you look at the way that Stephen Wilson has taken the marriage of the visual side and the audio side to another level with, you know, what he did with Deadwing, what he's doing with his new solo album.
Yep. Which comes with the DVD, yep.
Absolutely. I think you've got a lot of innovative creators who are thinking about, you know, not just album tour, but actually what they can do over and above that, how they can present their music to the world, embrace the technology. There's the flip side, there's the illegal downloading, etc.
Which does damage, and you know, I mean, you know, that's the one thing that some of the bands have sort of pointed out to me, as you know, they are hit quite hard. The likes of IQ and Pendragon are hit quite hard by the illegal downloading aspect of things.
I think that's a wide problem, not specifically prog.
I think that's really a problem for music per se.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's a double-edged sword because the availability of the technology, whether it's the internet or whether it's home studio recording, which has been responsible for some fantastic albums that historically would have needed massive budgets from major labels to achieve.
Yep.
It's brought so many new bands into the world of producing this kind of music, and also been the lifeblood and sustained a lot of the older bands that otherwise would have died out.
I agree. Well, you know, I think I agree with Nick very much that, you know, prog is in a healthy state. I mean, not to the point where, you know, suddenly it's going to be the biggest thing on the planet, but, you know, I think it's in certainly more than a healthy situation to keep itself going for at least
another decade. But we're not talking a small cult, you know.
No,
it's beyond that.
Very big.
At its worst, it was a small cult, but it's been healthier than that for a long time.
I think there's now the recognition, as you said, you're going from bands who can headline and sell out Wembley Stadium, Muse, to bands who are operating very much on the kitchen table, metaphorically speaking. And it's so wide in terms of presentation to a huge audience. And there was a time when Muse was sold on being, would you believe, a punk band.
Yes, I do remember.
Which they never were. But now people are recognising for what they are. And you don't have to put a term up. You just say progressively inclined music.
Indeed.
Works beautifully.
But I mean, I think throughout like the 90s, I would hear a band a year that excited me. And I think over the past 5 or 6 years, I'm hearing like a band a month.
Progressively
inclined nature.
That's fantastic.
You know, it's thinking of Titan over the past couple of years, and you know, most recently a band called Queen Elephantine, which just
in fact one of the younger writers was emailing me about recently. I mean, I just have to listen to some of the stuff that's happening on Lee Dorian's Rise Above label. Astra, Diagonal. Blood Ceremony.
Yes.
And all, you know, and I'm like, wow. And that's just one tiny little aspect.
Yeah. There's some extraordinary left field stuff, but you know, the hope that I would also have is putting on my evangelical hat for just a millisecond, is that, you know, the people that filled Stadia to see Genesis, or who go and see David Gilmour, who relished the reunion of Pink Floyd at in Hyde Park a couple of years ago, would look beyond the big best-known bands and dive into, you know, exploring the genre more widely. And that's what this magazine celebrates.
Indeed. And in fact, to conclude, I think, yes, let's hope that, you know, splashing Pink Floyd and loads of progressive images in garish colour on the wallet that the Classic Rock Presents Prog comes in, that will hopefully make some of those people pick it up, that they then feel inclined to explore a lot of the newer bands that we've featured in the magazine. That's basically what we think. We want to know now what you guys think. So email us, it's prog@futurenet.co.uk. Give us topics you want to hear discussed. We'll be doing one of these progcasts once a month. I'll probably almost always helm it, but it will feature different writers from the magazine, occasionally people from the industry side and the music making side, and every now and then we'll probably invite one or two of the more vocal, albeit through the ether, more vocal readers and listeners to come in and share their thoughts as well. The music that you heard on the inaugural podcast for Classic Rock Presents Prog was supplied by Panic Room. It's the intro to the opening track from their album Visionary Position. It's called Electricity. You can find it on their album The Visionary Position, which you can purchase from www.panicroom.org.uk. And with that, we bid you adieu till next month.